엄마 대신에 가시대하야 엄마 대신에 가시대하야 엄마 대신에 가시대하야 엄마 대신에 가시대하야 Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 28. Puranjana becomes a woman in his next life. Text number 32. Kascha praduhitaram.
Kascha praduhitaram.
Upayame dhavatam.
Upayame dhavatam.
Yasham drayuchit. Yasham dridha chucho jata.
Yasham dridha chucho jata.
Idma vahatma jomani.
Idma vahatma jomani.
Akashaha pragduhitaram.
Akashaha pragduhitaram.
Upoyame dhitavritam.
Upoyame dhitavritam.
Yasham dridha chucho jatam. Idma vahatma jomani.
Idma vahatma jomani.
Agascha pragatuhitaram.
Agascha pragatuhitaram.
Upayame dhitavritam.
Upayame dhitavritam.
Yasham dridha chucho jata.
Yasham dridha chucho jata.
Agastya.
Agastya.
The great sage Agastya.
The great sage Agastya.
Prak.
Prak.
First.
First.
Duhitaram.
Duhitaram.
Daughter.
Daughter.
Upayame.
Upayame.
Married.
Married.
Dhritavratam.
Dhritavratam.
Taken to vows.
Taken to vows.
Yasham.
Yasham.
Through whom?
Through whom?
Dhritachutta.
Dhritachutta.
Named Dhritachutta.
Named Dhritachutta.
Didaha.
Didaha.
Was born.
Was born.
Idmavaha.
Idmavaha.
Named Idmavaha.
Named Idmavaha.
Atmaja.
Atmaja.
Son.
Son.
Muni.
Muni.
Great sage.
Great sage.
The great sage named Agastya married firstborn daughter of Malayavaj, the vowed devotee of Lord Krishna. From her, one son was born, whose name was Dhritachutta. And from him, another son was born, whose name was Idmavaha. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The name Agastya Muni is very significant. Agastya Muni represents the mind. The word Agastya indicates that the senses do not act independently, and the word Muni means mind. The mind is the center of all the senses, and thus the senses cannot work independent of the mind. When the mind takes to the cult of bhakti, it engages in devotional service. The cult of bhakti, Bhakti Lata, is the first daughter of Mayavaj, and as previously described, her eyes are always on Krishna. Sitekshanam. One cannot render bhakti to any demigod. Bhakti can be rendered only to Vishnu, Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Thinking the absolute truth to be without form, the Mayavadis say that the word bhakti can apply to any form of worship. If this were the case, a devotee could imagine any demigod or any godly form and worship it. This, however, is not the real fact. The real fact is that bhakti can be applied only to Lord Vishnu and his expansions. Therefore, bhakti lata is dritha prata, the great vow. For when the mind is completely engaged in devotional service, the mind does not fall down. If one tries to advance by other means, karma yoga or jnana yoga, one will fall down. But if one is fixed in bhakti, he never falls down. Thus, from bhakti lata, the son Dhritachutta is born, and from Dhritachutta, the next son Idmavaha is born. The word Idmavaha refers to one who carries wood for burning in a sacrifice when approaching a spiritual master. The point is that bhakti lata, the coal of devotion, fixes one in his spiritual position. One so fixed never comes down, and he begets children who are strict followers of the Shastric injunctions, as said in the Vedas. Tad viginatam sagudam ivabhigachet samitpani sotiyam brahmanishtam. In the line of devotional service, those who are initiated are strict followers of the Vedic injunctions. Om Chakshuram Vritanjena Tasmaya Shri Gurave Namaha. So, in this pastime being related by the Radha Muni, this chapter here, King Paranjana, or the embodied living being representing all of us, becomes a woman in his next life. Nothing wrong with becoming a woman, but he probably wasn't expecting that. You know, he may have been thinking he'd get a spiritual form or something, but he again took birth, he's going to take birth again in an unexpected way than what he was thinking. Because his mind, here is discussing how we perform bhakti by fixing the mind. Srila Prabhupada explains that actually, he explains this in the Bhagavad Gita. The mind actually does the work. We actually work with our mind. And as Vasudeva explained to Kamsa, trying to convince Kamsa not to commit further atrocities, killing the children that would come from his wife Devaki, he was trying to convince him that, you know, it's your mental state. So Kamsa was preaching to Vasudeva, and Vasudeva was preaching to Kamsa. He was saying that, you know, what you should really fear, Kamsa, is your mental state, because that will produce your next body. And if you have all this envy and hatred, and that produces that type of body, where you take a low birth, where such persons take tamaguna, and you suffer the reactions of such a mentality. So, you know, and he was explaining that, Vasudeva is explaining that what happens, we have a mental state and we're actually working with our mind, and so we're given a body which literally are like instruments for the mind, but it's actually the mind working. So, here, Paranjana, you know, this here is describing that, of course, he can either fix his mind on the personality of Godhead and engage in bhakti yoga and work with his purified mind, on the spiritual platform in devotional service, or otherwise work with the mind and take a body, and we get a set of instruments, a nose and ears, a couple of nostrils, a couple of ears, we're lucky, mouth, at that, all the different bells and whistles. So, the mind uses those to work. So this Agastya Muni, he represents the mind. That's a very interesting point. I was thinking about that this morning, because when I do the mundan, there's three sages that you pray to. I always wondered why those three, why not others? There's Samadagni, who's the father of Parashurama. So whenever you use scissors, then it comes under the or any sharp instrument, it comes under the control of those who use weapons very expertly for someone's benefit. So Jamadagni, who's the father of the person under the control, Kashyapa, who is the father of actually Kashyapa, we know that Krishna explained that in a previous birth, he said when he was born, he said to Devaki, "This is the third time I've appeared to you. First as Sutapa and Prishni, and I appeared as the incarnation of Lord Prishnigala." He said, he appeared as Krishna, but in that form, not fully revealing his full manifestation of Krishna, but it was Krishna as his part of Prishnigala. And then, in the next millennium later, he appeared as Vamanadeva to Kashyapa and Aditi. And we understand from the scriptures that when Krishna appeared to Devaki and Vasudeva, the Kashyapa and Aditi were also able to join in on their forms, and to whatever capacity they had, enjoy those pastimes. So Kashyapa is very important, because he's not only the father of the demigods along with the deity, but he's also the father of the Supreme Personality of God in one sense, and that took part in that. And then Agastya, who represents the mind. Of course, when you're doing any ceremony for children, especially cutting their hair, you're praying that somehow the mind is protected. So in this way, those representing Sattva-guna and the mind, and the cutting the scissors. So I always wonder why those three. And when I was reading this, it sort of struck me. Agastya, he represents the mind. So in this way, so this is the mantras, the Vedas, there's so much there. Everything means something. We don't always know why. It can take us 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, a lifetime to find out, but every single word is there for a particular purpose. And of course, here, what we're discussing is that in order to control the mind, in order not to take an unexpected birth that we weren't wanting, that will cause us a lot more trouble than what we're already in. But if we can control the mind to fix it on the personality of Godhead, then we will not fall down and take birth again. So then we have to look at the Vedic conclusions. Who is God? So that's some of these points are being mentioned here in this verse. Who is God? Anyone got any ideas?
Shiva. Ganesh.
Okay. Yeah, we could go around. We could do this for hours here. So, let's propose Krishna. And we'll debate that. Okay. So, if you've got some arguments, hang on to them. Because I'm going to present something. If you disagree, I'm open to discussion. Because I'm just presenting what is being nicely presented by the Srimad Bhagavatam, by Srila Prabhupada and the Bhagavad Gita. So, let's take some Vedic injunctions. So, as it says at the very end of the purport here, that the point is that bhakti lata, the cult of devotion to Vishnu or Krishna, fixes one in his spiritual position. One so fixed never comes down, and he begets children who are strict followers of the Shastric injunctions. So those who can understand things as they are strict followers of the Vedas. So in the Vedas, just as we see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is, that is the Bhagavat Purana, which of the 18 Puranas, 6 in Sattva, 6 in Rajas, 4 of those in Rajas, 6 for those in Tamas. So the Bhagavat Purana was revised by Srila Vyasadeva on the order of Narada Muni to make it very clear that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that Bhagavat Purana is known as the Srimad Bhagavatam. And all the other Puranas also, there are many different quotations, such as in the Vishnu Purana, it says that prior to Krishna's birth, all of the demigods, all of the chief demigods and their wives, so Brahma, Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and Shiva, Ganesh, they used to regularly go, daily, along with the sages, Narada Muni, perhaps Agastya, they used to go there and offer prayers and worship Mother Devaki because she was the mother of God. So this is, so people are worshipping, Shiva, Brahma, and this one and that one as supreme, Maya. Those personalities, those demigods who people are worshipping as supreme, they went to worship Mother Devaki because within her womb is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that makes them definitely subordinate, servants. And so that is in the Vishnu Purana. And of course that the full expansion of that pastime is placed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And they used to chant the Purusha Shukta. The Purusha Shukta is worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the Purusha Shukta is one of the main prayers that is chanted by Brahmanas in worship, and that prayer is a prayer by the demigods, including Brahma and Shiva, to the Personality of Godhead Vishnu. Not to Shiva, that is chanted by Shiva, by those demigods, to the Personality of Godhead. But when they chant the Purusha Shukta, they're trying to worship, Vishnu, Shiva, it is all one. But that doesn't make sense. You don't see Vishnu chanting the Vishnu Purusha to anyone. So they go to Chiradakshay Vishnu, who is the super soul within everyone's heart. And he is also the supreme soul within the heart of all the demigods. Again, in every respect, we see that they are dependent, as Brahma, when he came into the universe, although he's the husband of Sarasvati, the goddess of knowledge, when he came into this universe, he had to take shelter of Vishnu. So, when they went to see Lord Vishnu, they sat in meditation. Again, we see the superiority of Vishnu. And of course, in the Bhagavad Gita, we know that Krishna showed Arjuna his the entire universe coming from him, and that is, you know, Vishnu is known that he is the source of the material manifestation with all its demigods. And Krishna showed the universe, the entire universal form coming from him, from his form as Krishna, and he also showed Arjuna his forearm Vishnu form, that form is also coming from Krishna. And Krishna says very clearly throughout the Gita that Vishnu form, the super soul of all living entities, including the demigods, who is within every atom, the controller of time, who controls everyone, the controller of everyone's destiny, that person is Krishna. So Vishnu is an expansion of Lord Narayan. And Lord Narayan expands from Krishna. This is stated in the Bhagavad Gita. So, although Vishnu is counted among the demigods because he performs the activities of maintaining the material affairs, so sometimes he is confused as one of the demigods, but actually he appeared before the universal creation in the form of Mahavishnu. And then, after glancing at the material energy, before there are any material universes, so there are no demigods, there are no universes. The Vishnu is there, the expansion of Narayan, and he glances at the material energy, so he's the super soul of the whole material energy. And then he expands into each universe and appears as a super soul within each and every universe, and then he expands again as a super soul within the heart of a living entity within every atom. So that Vishnu. So he appears to be one of the demigods, as if he's the Trinity. So if you ask any good Hindu, above everything, the Trinity. There's Vishnu, Shiva, we must look after the Trinity. Vishnu, Shiva, Brahma. And that is the absolute truth, because the absolute truth is impersonal. You know, these personalities, Brahma, the manifestation within the material world to look after the material motive, you know, Rajas for creation. Shiva manifested in this material world to look after the material mode of tamas, and Vishnu, the material mode of goodness, to look after maintenance. So they feel that Vishnu, because he's looking after sattva-guna, or maintenance of creation, that he is like the other demigods. Each one has one of the material modes in nature to look after. And then when Vishnu comes into this world as an avatar, so they know that all the avatars come, then they appear as a material mode of goodness, such as Krishna and Rama, like this. But ultimately, beyond the manifestations of these avatars and demigods, there is the unmanifested matter. Beyond that unmanifested matter, there is Brahman. That is their understanding. And yet the Vedas give a completely different description, that even Sankaracharya, who is the head of the impersonalists, he's the head of the entire impersonalist Sampradaya, he says that Narayan, Krishna, is beyond, he is before even the unmanifested state of the material manifestation. Even their leader says that. You cannot say that he is a manifestation of the material energy in goodness because he existed before that, before the unmanifested state. Even he says that in his commentaries on the Gita, etc. So, now, Vishnu, even when all of the demigods, approached Vishnu along with Bhumi, because 5,000 years ago, before the appearance of Krishna, the world was overburdened by great demoniac kings. And huge, therefore, massive sinful reactions overburdened the earth as well. Kings such as Kamsa. Kamsa was such a powerful personality. In his previous life, as Kalanami, he fought with the demigods. And even as Kamsa, he fought with the demigods. And they went running. Very, very powerful. Otherwise, why would the demigods, why would Brahma, Shiva, not just try to do something? So all of the demigods, they understood that unless we go to Vishnu, there is nothing that we can do, combined or individually. So again, showing the superiority of Vishnu. And then, when they went to Svetadvipa, which is actually a Vaikuntha planet, a spiritual planet within this universe where Shiradakshai Vishnu resides, they don't get to see Vishnu because he is so rare that even the demigods very rarely see him. So they sat in meditation, and Brahma prayed in meditation, and he heard from within his heart that Lord Vishnu said that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the full manifestation of Godhead, along with his first expansion, again, the full manifestation of Godhead, Balaram, would appear, and along with their full potencies, and protect the devotees, annihilate the miscreants, and in this way, remove the discrepancies in of irreligious principles, and re-establish the principles of religion. So just Brahma heard that transcendental message. So Vishnu, and these stories pervade all the Vedas. You know, the position of Vishnu at every step is way above the demigods and described as completely transcendental. To say that they're equal, therefore in the Vedas, it is described, what is an atheist? An atheist is one who doesn't accept the Vedic version that Vishnu, the Vishnu Tattva, Vishnu, expansion, Narayan, Krishna, Vishnu Tattva, they are supreme, and to consider any of the demigods to be equal or greater than, that person is considered an atheist. So one who considers that the trinity of Vishnu, Brahma and Shiva, that they're all equal because of this, you know, impersonal, foolish, that's actually an atheistic view, because to take that view, you have to discount the Vedas. Nastika. And as soon as you discount the Vedas, that is atheistic. So Krishna appeared along with Balaram. Now, Balaram is very significant. That Balaram, he appeared first. Balaram, he manifests the Prakash Tattva, that by the grace of Balaram, the personality of Godhead, his name, form, fame, pastimes to reveal, manifest. It's just like the sun, it's like prakash or illumination. And the sun is present, that we can see ourselves, we can see everyone else, we can know our duty, we can go about our business. Everything becomes illuminated. So Balaram, by his, although he's a personality of Godhead, but he acts in such a very merciful way to manifest fully the personality of Godhead. And therefore he's the original guru. And he awards the spiritual strength by which we can achieve the supreme transcendental bliss. So he awards that spiritual strength. Without Balaram's blessing, and without taking that blessing, that Balaram reveals the personality of Godhead and the process of Bhakti Yoga, without taking that blessing, one cannot have any strength on the spiritual path and one will fall down. And therefore, the spiritual master is the representative of Balaram, and therefore one who follows the spiritual master gets spiritual strength. And that spiritual strength means one is able to engage in devotional service and taste that transcendental nectar and be protected from commanders and chiefs of Maya. It has many ages to, for those who do not follow the proper process, he smashes them and keeps them. And therefore we see this here, that one so fixed never comes down, and he begets children who are strict followers of the Shastric injunctions as said in the Vedas. Then that quotation, etc. In the line of devotional service, those were initiated as strict followers of the Vedic scriptural injunctions. So that one who learns the Vedas from the Guru and follows them very strictly, they get the spiritual strength and the spirit and the higher taste by which they can traverse the path of the spiritual life. So as we said, that the demigods, when Krishna was in the womb of Devaki, they would come and offer prayers. So those prayers are very significant, because those prayers, exactly as we're describing here in this verse, that the cult of bhakti, Bhakti Lata, so the creeper of devotion, which we sow in the heart, and that creeper of devotion expands and gradually goes all the way to the lotus feet of the Lord, and then we attain lotus feet of the Lord in the spiritual world. So this cult of bhakti, Bhakti Lata, is the first order of Malaya Bhaj. And her eyes are always upon Krishna. Not Shiva. Not Ganesh. Not Durga. One cannot render bhakti to any demigod. Bhakti can be rendered only to Vishnu, Shravan, Kirtan, and Vishnu. Thinking the absolute truth to be without form, the Mayavadis say that the word bhakti can apply to any form of worship. If this were the case, a devotee could imagine any demigod or any godly form and worship it. This, however, is not the real fact. The real fact is that bhakti can be applied only to Lord Vishnu and his expansions. Therefore, Bhakti Lata is Dhritabrata, the great vow, for when the mind is completely engaged in devotional service, the mind does not fall down. Right? So the great vow, this Dhritabrata, that one takes this vow, that I will take to the process of bhakti, and that means with full faith and conviction and exclusive devotion I would just worship the Vishnu Tattva, who Vishnu Tattva, as Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, all the forms of Vishnu Tattva emanate their expansions from him. So I would just worship Krishna, the source of all Vishnu Tattva forms. That is the great vow. If that vow is not taken, one cannot perform bhakti. Now, bhakti means loving devotion, as a saying. I'm not sure where it comes from, but it says that one who worships many, many gods worships no god. So, for instance, if the husband says to his wife, "I love you," and the lady down the road, "There's another one around the corner, I love her too. And there was some more." I don't know. So, where's the love for anyone? Isn't it? And that's actually, you know, there's a common thing amongst the non-devotees, for want of a better term, that when they cheat on their partner, engage in illicit sex, they say, "But there was nothing in my heart for that person." That's the excuse. "I only love you." Okay. And the partner says, "Oh, okay." Very common. So, this great vow. So marriage, you know, marriage, they take a vow. That's what the red dot on the forehead. Every morning, the wife puts on the bindi, or the red dot, and she remembers that on the day of our wedding, my husband gave his heart exclusively to me. That is what that red dot means. So bhakti is like that. Now, of course, you know, one of the interesting things is that if we follow many gods, if you look at the pros and cons, obviously you don't have to love anyone exclusively. You can shop about the best bargain and the best opportunities. Something's not going right, just move on to the next one. And therefore, you don't have to really follow any real scripture. So one way to follow the scripture, like people like Kamsa, who's preaching to Vasudeva as he's killing his children, saying, "It's not my fault. Everyone knows that by providence we're all going to have to separate. So don't blame me. It's providence." So, what they do is you just take a little bit of this, a little bit from the scripture here, a little bit from there, a little bit from here. You mix it up, basically do whatever you like. So, if you take a little bit of this, it means yes, that's in the scripture. And someone says, "Oh, but it also says that our scripture did." "Oh, no, but we don't follow all of that. We have our other scriptures." So really you don't follow anything. So, Dridhavrata, so where's the bhakti? It's like an unchaste husband, here, there, running around, like that. They're doing as they please, so many excuses. Really, it's just very unchaste. So there's no question of love, there's no question of bhakti. So bhakti can only be when the soul reposes exclusively, the love of the soul in the one supreme soul. That is bhakti. It is eternal, an eternal loving relationship between the soul and the supreme soul. And the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains in the fourth chapter of the Gita that he came to teach this science of the ancient relationship between the soul and the supreme soul, the spiritual science. There's a science of bhakti. So, the demigods, they pray to Krishna, and in their prayers, many of the different points that they had were validating Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that one should not think he is impersonal and thus make the mistake of worshipping him as, you know, a manifestation of material goodness along with many other demigods. One should not. If one hears that teaching, and just as we're hearing now, those prayers are so auspicious that they fulfill your desires just by hearing this philosophy. The same philosophy which was heard by Devaki, by all the demigods, we hear that same philosophy, it fulfills one's desires. Very spiritual, it's full of spiritual potency. And so, you know, they described that, first of all, of course, they said that to Mother Devaki that Krishna is always true to his vow. So as Brahma heard that the Supreme Personality of Godhead would appear, they understood, now he's appearing. And they knew what his purpose was, to protect the devotees. They're very, very clear. Satyam Param, the Supreme Absolute Truth. Now in the prayers of the demigods, they go to a lot of trouble to describe, I'll just summarize it, that everything emanates from Krishna. So the demigods describe that this material world can be represented like a tree. So the tree stands on the ground. The ground is like the material energy, the total material energy. The material manifestation, this whole, everything we see within the material world is resting upon an energy that was originally in an unmanifest state, and then from that it grows. So that ground represents the material energy. The tree has three roots. Those three roots are Rajaguna, Tamaguna, Sattvaguna. And as you can see, that as we see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says this material energy, that is my material energy, it comes from me, I maintain it, and it comes back to me in the form of the pradana. A slightly spiritualized version of material energy. And therefore, the material energy is there, but the cause of that, it may be the cause of the material manifestation, but what is the cause of material energy? That is Vishnu. And that, from those, that tree, you come, get the three roots, and then you get the. On that tree, there are two birds sitting. One is the super soul Vishnu, one is the individual soul. The individual soul is tasting two types of fruits, happiness and distress. Two types of fruits. Those fruits have a variety of four tastes: religion, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Because even liberation, people's concept of liberation, it is all, unless one understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead and an eternal relationship with him, then that liberation is still covered by some degree of impure knowledge, impure intelligence that is affecting it. So now then the demigods explain that the personality of Godhead appears, and when he appears, all the speculation as who is supreme, and everything is one, and we can become... All the speculation about the absolute truth is just smashed. And the factual vigyan of realized knowledge, coming from personalities like Brahma and Shiva, who also in the scriptures tells Parvati that you know, amongst all the demigods, Vishnu is supreme. The personality of Godhead, he reveals the nature of the absolute truth. So that is established, and by revealing the nature of the absolute truth, everything else is smashed to pieces. And many sages, therefore, meditate upon the lotus feet of Krishna, knowing him to be the personality of Godhead. And by doing that, they have, it is described that apart from all the very, very difficult processes to try and attain liberation, which ultimately end in failure, just by meditating upon the lotus feet of the Lord, here is God, here is Krishna, or he may have expanded in the form of Ram, or this avatar or that avatar, but it's the same Supreme Person of Godhead. There is lotus feet. If I can fix my mind upon those lotus feet in devotion, I will not take birth again in any body, any material body, but I will actually attain the spiritual world. And therefore, it is described that when one meditates, the demigods are saying to Devaki, the Lord is so kind that when one meditates upon the lotus feet of the Lord, the entire material existence shrinks to the size of the little bit of water contained in the hoofprint of a calf, and one just steps over it. And because, so the Lord's lotus feet, they're the boat to cross the ocean of material existence very easily, but the process is so nice that the boat, you know, they take the boat, but the boats are always still on the other side for others, because they just step over. They can leave the boat. It is the boat, and the boat still stays there. Such a that is spiritual potency for Krishna. So now, but the impersonals, those who, anyone who cannot accept that God is a person and that he is completely spiritual, and that he can come down with his two hands, holding his flute, beautifully dressed with his peacock feather, and he can walk among us like he was one of the humans, although he's the Supreme Person of Godhead. If one cannot, the same as Lord Ramchandra, if one cannot keep that faith in the Lord's lotus feet, then for them, even if they, after many, many lifetimes, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, perhaps millions, on the path of spirituality, as you know, this is after they get to the human form, if they attain liberation, they cannot maintain that because there's no spiritual activity. You know, they come to the point, yes, now I'm liberated, what to do for the next billion, billion years of eternal life? I'll just be here doing nothing. Well, I don't have a form anymore. I can't talk to anyone. Nothing to think about, nothing to see. They fall down again. And so, after all that effort, now, you know, these jnanis and yogis, it's a lot of difficulty, a lot of austerity, many, many lifetimes. And all they do is the trouble to get there and then fall, and really there's no gain. Just the trouble that they've undertaken, that's the only thing that they'll get out of it. Just that trouble. So much difficulty. So, Krishna, but the sages, they understand that this personality of Godhead, he has nothing to do with the material energy. If you think of his pastimes, if you think of his form, if you say his name, it's none different from him, because he is the absolute truth. It's absolute. You know, if you want to eat a mango in the material world, you know, and you don't have a mango, you say mango, 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 you'll go hungry. And I was asking a devotee the other day. Some of you may know. If in your dreams you eat a mango, you know when you wake up you still not feel satisfied, right? Because your stomach will be empty, but you're probably because you're hungry, you know, you sort of dream. But if you have some prasadam in your dreams, will you be satisfied?
I felt pretty satisfied just before doing
it. Yeah? It's a fact. Actually, one time, Prabhupada, you know, a devotee asked Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada, how do we think of the Lord 24 hours a day? It just seems so difficult. Prabhupada says if you practice during the day, then even when you're sleeping, you think of Krishna. And he gave this example. He said that sometimes, when I'm dreaming, I'm eating halva in a dream. And I'm eating and eating a long time. It's so nice. So Prabhupada is feeling this spiritual bliss in his dreams. But the interesting thing there is that Prabhupada says, you know, when you're thinking of halva, you're actually thinking of Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? Because it's absolute. That's the thing I found fascinating about that. And I was telling devotees the other day, I actually had, you know, just an experience when I was in Tasmania, that as a brahmachari, probably in somewhere. Maybe 70s, 80s, and early 80s. I went to Tasmania with Sankirtan Party. I think it may have been Annie Rudy, Prabhu, and maybe one or two other devotees. And I got really sick. I was so sick. In my teens and 20s, I used to get ill a lot more, and quite serious illnesses. But you know, massive headache, you know, the glands, just it's like people sticking knives, and, you know, it's like, feels like your head's going to explode, pain right through the chest and the whole body, fever, very, very painful, absolute agony, and it just lasts for days. There's no, and of course in those days, we didn't go to the doctors, and you know, if you're on Sankirtan, you're on Sankirtan. Was that? Yeah. So we just, you know, you just sort of toughed it out, and if you're fortunate, it didn't happen a lot, especially with Sankirtan devotees, you might get a day off, but usually, quite often, you just went out there. Anyway, after a couple of days, when I went to bed, because this is Tasmania, and it was pretty cold. From memory, it was like winter. In those days, we didn't have jackets and all those sort of things. You had your set of clothes. You know, if you're lucky, a thin jumper, a wrap, usually a wrap. They don't really supply blankets and things like that, so there might be a sheet. It was very, very cold. I was freezing and I was really ill. So in my dream, my spiritual master came in, held a glass, like a jar, with some maha sweets. And he opened up and said, Ganga, take one of these. And so I dipped my hand in, I ate one of these sweets. Thinking, that's, and I, you know, it was so nice, my hand just went straight back in like that. But he put the lid on. He said, that's all you need. And then he disappeared. So when I woke up, although I was just as sick, I was literally lying there like in a bliss ball. You know, So I had no sensation of any pain in my entire body, although the fever was there, the gland, everything was the same. I knew I was just as sick, but I had no sensation. I was lying there laughing and laughing and laughing. That's bishara. So the devotees know, you know. I mean, just a very simple example, because when I became a Hare Krishna devotee, you know, I was literally like the personification of bad habits just walking around. You know. And I couldn't give up anything, the dhritabrata. You know, my vow was to, you know, enjoy unlimited sense gratification, like Kamsa. And that was my vow. And basically, for years, I struggled with my mind and my senses. And then, the day I joined, I stopped every vice I had and used to eat mountains of prasadam. And I mean mountains. I won't go into the detail. But then I kept waiting for these, you know, when you give up, you know, cigarettes. I mean, right to the day I joined, I was doing, you know, smoking, drinking. And I kept thinking, I'm going to get some withdrawals, you know, like you're craving something you've just given up yesterday. Nothing. It never ever came. I was doing something. Stop. Eating bishara. That's it. Habits gone. Craving gone. Everything. And that. So I always understood, this Krishna bishara, that's Krishna. So, the devotees, they understand Krishna is the absolute truth. Anything related to Krishna, including service to Krishna, Prabhupada says, service to Krishna and association with the devotees is tantamount to being in the association of Krishna. So, then, so Krishna appears and the devotees, they absorb themselves in Krishna. But then, he's so kind that for all those who are just common people with no spiritual interests or what have you, for them, he arranged this pastime with the Mahabharata, with the beautiful stories, you know, politics, there's war, there's intrigue, there's romance, everything is there. And because Krishna is the central character, Prabhupada describes in the Krishna book that if one hears that Mahabharata, and they're just ordinary people, they will be elevated to the liberated platform of the pure devotees of the Lord. So this is Bhakti Lata, which means Bhakti Lata cult. It is a vow strictly worshipping Vishnu Tattva, Krishna, the source of all expansions of Vishnu Tattva, not worshipping demigods as equal to Vishnu, not worshipping Krishna as an ordinary person or a material person, but worshipping Krishna as the absolute truth, the source of all material and spiritual manifestations, who even walk in this world in a two-armed form like an ordinary human being and appeared among us. That person is the absolute truth, the source of everything, and there is no one higher than him. One who has that understanding can perform bhakti. Otherwise, as you know, I see many times within, especially within Hinduism, is that, you know, there's bhakti for, you know, Kali, and there's bhakti for Ganesh, and there's bhakti. That's not bhakti. You can't use bhakti in that sense. Okay, any comments or questions?
Translation is the Agastya Muni is mentioned. Now, as we understand it, as story is flowing, it's more of a allegorical flow, is it?
Yes.
Now, we also know the son and the grandson, the mention of the Agastya Muni, and then I just try to grasp whether now Narada Muni is going to actual or is it going to
Well, yes, you know, whether the actual sage Agastya Muni had a relationship with this firstborn daughter Malayadvaj, and then had a son, you know. So, from what I understand, it is an allegorical story. But as I was explaining with the ceremonies, with the you know, even for the hair cutting, that samskara purification, where we get the blessings of the Lord for the little babies. Whenever we connect with Krishna in devotion, we understand that the particular demigods in charge of all the aspects of our body, that we have now a properly established relationship with them. So anyone who follows the bhakti cult, Agastya Muni, who's one of the demigods that can, you know, award that fixed state of mind, we have his blessings automatically. So it's not, you know, the actual person. So, you know, and you know, we are the... So in this way, although it is allegorical, but Agastya can be, you know, it can be understood that he is in the picture, you know, as are all the demigods, when one worships the personality of Godhead, because you know, it's stated by Krishna that you know, all the cows, you know, and the demigods, in one sense, they are, you know, they act like limbs of the Lord. You know, that they act like limbs. They're not actually limbs, but they act like limbs of the Lord. And the devotees themselves are like the Lord's heart. You know, they represent the innermost thoughts, you know, of the Lord's heart and his knowledge. So when our relationship is there with Krishna, our relationship with such personalities of Agastya Muni is properly fixed, and the benefit that we derive from such sages, persons will derive from such sages, that is automatically there, but even far, far above that. There are many other personalities, as described in the Krishna book here in this second chapter, who are commanders-in-chiefs who present stumbling blocks for the mind. And if one is not properly situated on the transcendental path, those personalities can affect them. But if one is properly situated on the path, the personalities who can assist us, assist us. So, you know, this body, although, you know, we're directly, being directly, from the very beginning, when one surrenders to Krishna, yes, Krishna, you are the absolute truth, I surrender unto you only. Prabhupada mentions in the preface of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that from the very beginning, one becomes directly under the charge of Krishna. And that means that all the demigods assist. They're just like Devaki. So when Devaki was, you know, fearful of Kamsa, Kamsa represents, you know, that material influence which wants to prevent the absolute truth from manifesting. So friends, and that can be all sorts of philosophies, Hinduism, impersonalism, you know, so many different things that want to cover Krishna as the absolute truth and disturb the mind to keep it enclosed like David could put in the prison. So what did the demigods do? And this is an example, is they personally came to her and invisibly appeared to her and spoke so many things to alleviate her mind. That she wouldn't be, that yes, the absolute truth is here, and all the demigods are assisting me to be peaceful and just, you know. So, as you can see there, how the demigods are very happy to, whatever they can do to assist a devotee, they will do that. And because when we accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we basically declare war upon Maya and all the agents of Maya, and commanders in chief of Maya, and they will want to suppress this concept of Vishnu as the Supreme. And as Kamsa did in this world, people, because they think that Vishnu exists within the heart of a devotee as like a concept, so therefore then why are they not worshipping me, Kamsa? Oh, they're worshipping Vishnu. I've got to get that out of the heart. It's just material. It's not, you know, some concept in the heart. Okay, we'll stop them from performing their ceremonies. We'll kill the cows that they've got. You know, we'll smash their temples. And when that's done, this will go from their heart, everything finished. So this, you know, so basically those elements within this universe, including those that sometimes battle with the demigods, and those in this world, they are trying to suppress that devotion to the absolute truth. But when one becomes a devotee of Krishna, all the actual powerful demigods assist the devotee in whatever way, Maya Devi, from which all the demigods are manifest. She becomes a friend and helps the devotee on the path of devotional service. Mm. So, you know, the relationship is actually there, properly. Yeah. Although in the story, the marriage is allegorical. Mm. Any other questions?
Love.
What's that?
Bhakti means love.
Right? Bhakti, yes.
That means
pure love. Yeah. Bhakti means pure love. Yeah, and pure love only exists between the living entity and God. Yes.
So, one of the entities are part and parcel of God.
Mm.
So we can love all the entities, right?
Yes. So, Prabhupada explains in the preface, an introduction to the Krishna book, that by reading the Krishna book and learning how to love Krishna, it facilitates our ability to love all living entities. If we don't love the Supreme Lord, it's not possible to love all living entities. It can't be done separately. But if we love Krishna, because every living entity is the child of Krishna, the spiritual child, eternal spirit, we love them. And so, you know, like Jesus said, hate the sin, not the sinner. You know, we're not against anyone. Not the Jagais and Madais, anyone. But if you love Krishna, you would love everyone. Yeah, otherwise, it's not possible. Yeah. Okay. Jaya. Prabhupada ki jaya.